Hello there, this is VK3OTN, the official station of the Radio Amateur Alzheimer's Club of Australia, with a monthly news broadcast for members and friends of the club for July 2025. This month, instead of the usual broadcast, we will offer an historical broadcast from years past. The usual news and information will be broadcast next month. I'm Andrew, VK3 Charlie Alpha Hotel. I have broadcast files going back as far as 2001. Many of the older files aren't the greatest as far as technical quality goes, archived in either Real Audio or Windows Media Audio format. These produced a smaller file size back in the days when the leading edge technology was dial-up internet. Remember that? This month we have an original broadcast from December 2002. Details and when to hear these news and information broadcasts are available at the club website, www.raotc.org.au. The VK3OTN is available on a wide range of radio platforms, HF, VHF and UHF, 2-meter repeaters, amateur television, DMR, that is digital mobile radio, and D-Star. These news broadcasts are available for download for up to 6 months, just in case you miss the original news broadcast from the RAOTC website. If you'd like to contact the club, then why not send us an email, raotc@raotc.org.au. I hope you enjoy this month's broadcast.
Hi there, this is Alan Durbin, VK3AMD and Associated Relay Stations. As VK3OTN, the official call sign of the Radio Amateurs Alzheimer's Club Australia Incorporated. Hang on a jiff, lost a bit of paper. Some news about the club. As advised in the September issue of our magazine OTN, the inaugural annual general meeting of our now incorporated club was held at the combined club rooms in Moorabbin on Tuesday the 12th of November, and as required by the Articles of Association, the annual general meeting was followed by a committee meeting. Your existing committee was re-elected with the exception of Bill Clark, VK3ZLN, who withdrew his nomination for family health reasons. Ron Cook, VK3AFW, had been nominated and was elected. The result of the meeting was as follows. Bill Roper, VK3BR, will take on the office of President as of January the 1st, and Alan Doble, VK3AMD, will become Vice President at that date. Arthur Evans, VK3VQ, was elected as Secretary Treasurer and Public Officer, and Bill Roper, VK3BR, as Membership Secretary. Stuart Day, VK3ASD, was elected Editor of our magazine, ATN. Ron Fisher, 3OM, is Broadcast Coordinator, and Alan Doble, VK3AMD, is Broadcast Presenter. Bruce Bethel, 3UV, and Ron Cook, VK3AFW, are other committee members without specific duties but will make valuable contributions to committee work. The financial report was received showing a satisfactory position, and the decision was made that there would be no increase in fees in our financial year ending next November. The next issue of our magazine OTN will be produced in March as usual. Radio conditions last month were by far the worst we have ever experienced, and many members were unable to receive our program. All frequencies were affected. Here's hoping things will be much better today. This is VK3OTN. Clem Patchett, VK6ATN, reports that the next meeting over there will be on Tuesday, December the 10th at the Bayswater Tavern. It will be the Christmas function and the last meeting for this year. A good turn-up's expected and seating for 35 has been booked. And Clem6ATN also reports the recent passing of a well-known West Australian amateur, Trig Trigwell, who served in the Antarctic in 1957 where he had the call sign VK0AT. In 1961, Trigg was awarded the Polar Medal for good service during the Queen's visit to Perth in 1961. This is VK3AMD, and he says VK3OTN. Today we welcome to our membership three full members. They are Alan Austin, VK6MA, who becomes member number 1269, Alan Burke, VK6AN, who becomes member number 1270, and Jim Griffiths, VK2BGG, who becomes member number 1271. All of our new members are invited to identify themselves on the call back on whichever frequency you're listening on today. And we regret to report the passing promise of Doug Richards, VK3CCY, member 9932, a long-time active member of this club and the Moravian District Radio Club, and also Leo Fowler, VKZGF, who was member number 556. We pause now for a few moments in memory of our departed friends. This is VK3OTN. We have two items here from Blue Easterling, VK4BBL. The first follows on from the inclusion in a recent broadcast of the obituary of Alan Bagg, VK3AG, and refers to his having heard what was believed to be the last transmission of Amelia Earhart before she disappeared, and he writes, there were no books on it in the local library, but their computer search showed me there were some in some other branches, and I selected Lost Star to search for Amelia Earhart by Randall Brink, ISBN number 0393-02683-3. It was published in 1994, and it was his hope that the book by some other authors would he'd read back in 1970 might show up, but it didn't. And there were one of the two books he found. As for the flight itself, The Lost Star is informative and well worth reading. Things were, that we didn't know, that in 1937 the Japanese armed forces outnumbered those of the USA, so the Yanks had to tread very carefully. The Pacific Islands, mandated to Japan after World War I, had been fortified contrary to the terms of the United Nations mandates and were sealed off from the rest of the world. So whether the flight started off as an intelligence gathering scheme or became one after it had been mooted is not known. The various writers all complain of the wall of secrecy that still exists, quite apart from the mountains of material stored in various places around the USA. Research of the files is not allowed. Their freedom of information requires an individual document will be forthcoming if the inquirer can provide all details of it. Searching through the files to find such a document is not allowed, so they get nowhere. The plan was that the flight from Lake Howland Island would take in a dog legs to truck in the Caroline Islands. At Howland, a dot on the map, the U.S. government had built an airstrip and a fuel dump. And the U.S. Coast Guard cutter, Ithaca, was to provide radio communication. Now, one of the other books calls that boat the Athabasca, but they were wrong. American hands were involved. I don't know if Earhart was to use hand bands or if the hands were to use the aircraft frequencies, which were given as 3105 kHz per day and 6210 for night, which seems to me the wrong way round. Lost Star gives the call signs of a few American amateurs. 1937 was, I think, before our DCA set up its own chain of stations. Old logs of Sydney Radio, BIS, show that aircraft were being worked. Kingsford Smith's 1935 mail flight to New Zealand was worked through BIS, and the logs are still in the manager's safe, or were still in the manager's safe when I left in 1982. That's Blue talking. The manager was a pal of his, so the air ground was a bit of a hodgepodge. Coastal radio and outpost stations, etc. Bulalo at that time was owned and operated by Guinea Gull Developments. Obviously the Japanese had wind of the flight and would monitor the frequencies. Their big carrier, Akagi, was in the area and its fighters were sent to force the Electra down. Earhart put her down on a quay or something similar and a landing party from the seaplane tender Kamoi arrived and took her and Noonan prisoner. Until then she was still transmitting. They were taken to Saipan, and thence, we believe, to Japan. Naturally, both the USA and Japan were not going to talk about the real purpose of the flight. As a footnote, truck was photographed on the 8th of January 1942 by an RAAF Hudson flying from Rabaul to Kabiang, where it departed at 5:44 a.m. They arrived at truck 4.5 hours later, photographed 12 warships, 3 merchant ships, and 1 hospital ship. 27 bombers were parked. They did the run and then the firing started. The pilot, Flight Lieutenant Yoa, dived into a rain cloud to evade the fighters, closing in after having spent 25 minutes over the target. A fortnight later, the board was invaded. The book that Blue quotes from, Lost Star, gives UTC times and frequencies for transmission from Earhart for quite a while after Alan Vague's hearing. It appears she was forced down on the beach of a small atoll in Japanese territory, but was still able to transmit. Trouble was, every attempt to try and contact her after the transmission, after her transmissions, failed. She and her navigator Noonan, together with the plane with its broken wing, were taken to Saipan by the Japanese at Tarawa. The book includes a photo from National Archives, Washington, taken by an American Air Force plane during the bombing of this island in 1944, and the plane with its broken wing is shown on the near the airfield. The book also includes a photograph of Amelia Earhart in uniform, being sworn into the U.S. Army Air Force as a major. The officer standing on her right is identified as Major General Oscar Westover, who at that time, in 1937, the year of Earhart's flight, was commanding officer of the U.S. Army Air Force. This book also confirms what others have said, that the model of Lockheed Electra that she actually used was different to the widely published model and had larger engines, and was fitted with extra large fuel tanks. Although many documents involving Earhart are still locked away in various U.S. archives, there seems to be little doubt that she intended to fly over some of the Japanese islands on behalf of the U.S. government. The book that is interesting reading, I'll repeat, its title is Lost Star, The Research for Amelia Earhart. The author is Randall Brink, B-R-I-N-K, was published in England in 1994 by Bloomsbury Publishers, and the ISBN number is 0-7475-14380. Thanks, Blue, for alerting me to this book. And I said earlier we had a second item from Blue, VK4BBL, and here it is. Received the newsletter yesterday and was saddened to hear the passing of Clary Castle, VK5KL, during the horrific bushfires in the VK5-VK3 border area in 1938-39. He distinguished himself in providing essential communications. It was written up in Radio and Hobbies or one of those magazines. In early 1943, I was in the radio maintenance section of 31 Squadron of Bowfighters at Kimberley Creek, Northern Territory. And Clary came there one day and had a power away with our Sergeant Ray Hunt. I think he was a pre-war hand. And we were all thrilled to see the man. The whisper was he was to check any lend-lease gear we had. Anyway, they went off to lunch and that was that. Some years ago, a piece by him was in the newsletter, so I wrote and reminded him of the visit and how buck we all were to meet him. Harry wrote back and said that after 50 years, he could speak freely. He and Ray had been given a very hush-hush job of monitoring. They could only communicate eye to eye, nothing on paper or by telephone. They had located two stations transmitting long runs of broken up dots and dashes, both at the same time, one with dots and the other with dashes. Barry and Ray put the two audio outputs together and it was recognizable Morse, but not the normal international code. The skilled chap from Number 2 Wireless Unit at Bachelor identified the uncoded Kana code at which Number 2 staff were expert. Oh, the fiendish cunning of those Orientals. Not hard to do when you think of it. Oscillate the dash contact of a bug key connected to one keying line and the dot contact to another, so that on one frequency there are dots and the other dashes, spaced out, of course. Clary was quite a man. Thank you, Bill, for that interesting note. This is VK3OTN for the Radio Amateur on Timers Club. My cousin Donald Withers in Sydney was never an amateur, but he was a technical officer in the Beam Wireless Service and ATC. He sent me a photocopy of the magazine Transit, which was the staff magazine of the Overseas Telecommunications Commission. It is dated volume 12, I've just made the number, what is it, number 2, volume 12, number 2, and is dated in April to May 1950. I can't show you the photos, but here's the story. Neville shoots on the beach story, now being filmed in Australia by Stanley Kramer Film Productions, contains two incidents related to radio stations. In one, unintelligible Morse signals from America are heard in the Melbourne radio receiving station in the year 1960, at a time when nuclear fallout has supposedly eliminated all life in the Northern Hemisphere. In the other, a submarine is sent to America to investigate, and a man completely enclosed in a radiation protection suit goes ashore to the abandoned radio station, where he finds a wind-blown blind rocking an empty Coke bottle, and that is operating the Morse key. After looking for a suitable radio station in Australia to fit in with these details in Neville Shute's story, Stanley Kramer Film Productions decided upon OTC's Rockbank station, and with the Commission's approval, finalised all arrangements for the actual film sequences. Residents in the Rockbank area were woken in the early hours of Tuesday, the 24th of February 1959, by the rumble of vehicle after vehicle. There were six semi-trailers, two of them housing generating plants for providing 500 and 1100 amps of power, one power-driven wind generator, one motor coach, one luxury dressing caravan, mobile catering coach, vans equipped to serve three-course meals, one camera van, 12 large cars, and one police courtesy car. Some 30 vehicles in all, plus a workforce 100 strong, all heading towards OTC's Rockbank radio receiving station. Once there, the Stanley Kramer fill units run quickly and smoothly into action. In record time, the receiver room and annex took on the appearance of a forest, as arc lights of all shapes and sizes and subsidiary lights were positioned. Plywood flooring was laid for the camera dolly, and a gimmick table set up for the incident where a Morse key is accidentally operated by a windblown blind and a rocking Coke bottle. Then, as the American radio station in the story is supposed to have been deserted for some 2 years, the atmosphere was created by such simple devices as straw and papers, disused teacups, a film of dust, and so on. The stage having been set, numerous light meters were used to determine film exposure and tape measures to check all camera angles and positions. With everything ready and under the quiet direction of Mr. Kramer, filming commenced. The only actor taking part in the scene was Hart McGuire, who was Randy Stone of Night Beat fame, although stand-ins for Gregory Peck and Ava Gardner were present. Each sequence was painstakingly set up, rehearsed, and filmed, followed by close-ups and publicity stills. For the American scene, Hart McGuire was shown in a radiation suit entering the station, approaching the gimmick table and studying the way in which the Morse key was accidentally operated, followed by close-ups of his facial expressions. Shots were also taken of the Franklin aerial arrays. Thus, appropriately enough, Rockbank Radio Receiving Station, established for the inauguration of Australians' overseas radio services, became the first known international radio station to feature in a major film presentation. Incidentally, the entire filming program at Rockbank, which took from early morning until 3:30 p.m. in the afternoon, will represent under 2 minutes of the actual screening time in the finished production. Throughout the day, there was no real disturbance to the normal reception station routine of the station, film proceedings being stopped immediately whenever servants' requirements warranted an interruption, while Mr. Kramer was meticulously careful in ensuring the Commission's facilities were in no way affected. With 1 hour at the end of the filming, all signs of the day's most unusual activities were completely removed. No soundtrack was made at Rockbank, firstly because of possible interruptions to the normal activities of the station, and secondly because of residual sound from operating equipment. Sound will subsequently be dubbed in during the editing of the takes. A $3 million production on the beach will be edited in America toward the end of this year, after which it will be simultaneously released in 15 capitals throughout the world. Thanks, Tom Letters. My cousin... I can well remember that film And here he's seen of a deserted Swanson Street with dust and newspapers blowing along it, and also the sort of eerie feeling of that suited-up man entering the room with the Coke bottle and was sending the apparent Morse. Interesting. Thought you'd feel a bit nostalgic about that. This is VK3OTN. A couple of weeks ago, I was listening on 20 metres long path Europe and came across a very interesting conversation between a VK2 and German station, Delta Foxtrot 2 Blue Ocean. They were discussing antennas. It turns out that VF2BO was the principal of a company manufacturing a wide range of antennas, which were highly patented and sold in Europe and America. Many were multi-band and all were trapless. One described as a multi-bander with 16 elements on a 26.5-foot boom. He said he'd sold one of his antennas in Queensland. He gave a web address, which I didn't copy, but think he gave his trading name as OptiBean. If you're interested, you might search for that name on your computer and let members know what you find. This is VK3OTN. Standard time signals. All of us have used both the WWB and our own BNG for time and frequency checks over many years. Ron Cook, VK3AFW, has provided us with a history of BNG and also the technical details of it. BNG transmits on 2.5 MHz with 1 kilowatt, on 5 MHz with 10 kilowatts, on 8.638 MHz with 10 kilowatts, on 12.984 MHz with 10 kilowatts, and on 16 MHz with 5 kilowatts. Various types of antennas are used. Now for the bad news. BNG will cease to exist in 29 days' time. That's Tuesday, December the 31st. What a show it's gone already. And Ron Cook adds a further note in which he says, "Yes, so we see the passing of Australian time and frequency standards once maintained at public expense for the common good. In today's use of pays world, provision of such a free service is unacceptable. GPS is available free off-air because it suits the US government to do so, and it will continue to be available for many years yet because the US military regard it as essential. Oh well, if everything including essentials, food, water, clothing and housing are all taxed, at least the air we breathe is still free. So take a deep breath and smile." 73, Ron Cook, VK3AFW. Good on you, Rob. This is VK3AMD and associated relay stations at VK3OTN. We invite interested amateurs to join the Radio Amateur Old Timers Club, Australia Incorporated. There are two grades of membership: full membership for those who have been licensed for 25 years and more, associate membership for those who have been licensed for 10 years and more. Age does not enter into it. Subscriptions are currently $8 per year with a joining fee of $5. These figures apply to both grades of membership. Members receive two interesting 30-page magazines each year, one in March, one in September. Associate members are upgraded to full membership automatically when the 25-year date comes up. Associate members cannot hold office in the club. That's the only restriction. If you would like to receive an application, a membership application form, please contact our secretary, Arthur Evans, VK3BQ, whose telephone number is 03-9598-4262, or Alan Doble, VK3AMD, 03-9570-4610, 9570-4610. We're both okay in any call. And then there's the story of the married couple who were invited to a fancy dress party. They decided not to tell each other what costume they would wear, but keep a surprise on the night. Unfortunately, when the day arrived, the wife had developed a migraine and couldn't go to the party. So the gallant husband offered to stay home and look after her. The wife, knowing her husband had been looking forward to the party, refused the offer and sent him away to change. The husband donned his specially ordered outfit, an elaborate and colourful found suit complete with flashing lights on a hat powered by hidden batteries. He showed his wife the suit and seized her to bed and, reluctantly, left. An hour later, the wife, feeling the prescribed medication taking effect, decided to go to the party after all and surprise her husband, who has not seen her outfit, a slinky cat suit complete with whiskers and tail. Arriving at the party, the wife angrily sees husband being over-friendly with a 70-year-old and decides to show him a thing or two. She orders a triple of her favourite drink, gets rid of the girl, and leads her husband into the bushes in the back garden. When the party shows signs of winding up, she takes a taxi home and goes to bed. She pretended to awaken when the husband arrived and sweetly asked how the party was. "Terrible," he replied. "It wasn't the same without you, and I just couldn't enjoy myself knowing you were at home unwell. So I went upstairs and played cards with some of the boys. And to make matters worse, the bloke I lent my clown suit to left a nymphomaniac in a cat suit and gave him the time of his life in the back garden." And on that happy note, I'll leave you for a little while. This is Alan Doble, BK3AMD, and Associated Relay Stations is BK3OGN for Radio Amateur Climbers Club Incorporated. We will not be any transmission in January. That's the usual thing, nothing in January. Transmission will resume on the first Monday of February, and that's February the 3rd, at the same times and frequencies as today. We wish all our listeners a happy Christmas and a pleasant and healthy New Year. And now we look forward to reports and comments from you all in the callback on whatever frequency you've been listening to. So, 73, this is VK3AMD, is VK3AMD, going clear of the frequency. And
that's all we have for you this month, and we hope you found something of interest. Thanks for being with us, and we hope you will join in the callbacks, where callbacks are taken. The next RAOTC news and information broadcast will take place on the first Monday of next month, on the same frequencies, and at the same times as today, with the exception of January. If you have missed all or part of this broadcast, or you just want to listen to it again, it is available for download from the RAOTC website. Simply go to www.raotc.org.au. Again, the website URL is www.raotc.org.au. Click on VK3OTN Broadcasts, and you will be able to see the various times and frequencies of the VK3OTN transmissions by all of our volunteers, provided of course a volunteer is available. Sometimes the relay station is an automated broadcast, for example, a repeater, where no operator is available to take callbacks. Other times the volunteer operator suffers from very heavy local QIM, and callbacks are not always possible. Many operators need a small amount of time to switch from playing a recorded file to using a microphone. Please be mindful of this. This is VK3OTN signing clear from today's news and information session. 73 from the RAOTC broadcast team.